From retro myths to modern day masterpieces, we'll be breaking down the universe's most pondered gaming questions. Join us as we journey through our childhood memories. We'll be diving into what it meant to us growing up through the dawn of the internet. The Cake is a Lie podcast with your hosts, Gareth and Jamie.
Welcome back to the Cake is a Lie podcast. Today's episode is most nostalgic games. So games of my childhood. Today we have tasked each other to select five games which you found were childhood for you. And what I mean by that were like that Christmas morning feeling, that butterfly sensation in your stomach. If you were to replay these games, would you still get that kind of first game buzz? And today I'm joined with my co-host Gareth. How are you this morning, Gareth?
I'm fantastic because I have better audio this time because I got a new microphone. And your audio is also better.
You copied me,
Jamie,
didn't you?
Your audio is also better, but for different reasons.
Yeah, for those I was not aware, last time I was actually speaking into the rear of the mic. I had the microphone facing away from me. Awkward. Well, it doesn't make sense to have the button on the back, does it?
You set the button once and then you finish and then you talk.
Well then.
Anyway. All right. So tell me, before we start into the top five, what does it mean for you to have a nostalgic game? What's a nostalgic game for you? What's the feeling that it evokes?
I think, like, even if it was just a game title, like, if I was to say a name and I was like, that was something that I played during my childhood, instantly it kind of teleports you back to, you know, the music and the atmosphere. Well, I suppose like games back then, it's not that they were terribly story driven, especially the first game I'm going to mention. But I think it's just, it's that feeling of family as well, because a lot of these games, especially early on, would have been games that I would have played with my brother. So it's just kind of family and getting together.
Gives you the warm fuzzies.
The warm fuzzies, man.
Gives you the warm fuzzies. I think also it's like, it's not even just playing the games with the family. It's like the atmosphere, because obviously they're all kids' games. So you would have been in a house that was full of people that had all your family around you, whether they were playing or involved or not. It's still kind of that atmosphere, you know? Think of,
well,
like,
you'd only probably one TV in the house.
We had two. We had a really small shitty one, and then we had a big one in the main TV room. The really small shitty one was where we had like the Sega setup, but I think it's also like, you think of like my most nostalgic games, most of them center around either groups of friends when I was a kid, or a lot of them also center around like Christmas Day, you know, like getting that game for Christmas Day and the house is buzzy and you're visiting all your relatives and stuff. I think that's a big factor, you know, from both sides. So for me, it's always coming, like, a nostalgic game is always coming back to a certain feeling. So it's not just like that, you know, I hear a sound and I think like, oh, that's kind of nostalgic. I hear like the PlayStation logo startup team, right? When I hear that, I instantly think of being back in the playroom of my childhood best friend where we would play the PlayStation, you know? I instantly had that image. I can remember what the couches looked like, what the garden looked like out the window, who was there, what the TV looked like. I remember it so perfectly, you know.
It's mad, crazy, isn't it? It's mad how sound kind of like really holds memory.
Yeah. There's one in particular. It's not that old a game, but I still have the nostalgia for it. It's not on my top five, so I'll mention it now. And that's Arkham Origins from the Arkham series. And this was like the most hated Arkham game, let's say, Arkham Origins. Because it's not part of the main story of Asylum City and Knight.
Right.
And basically, the whole game takes place on Christmas Eve, right? So Batman is literally, Bruce Wayne is sitting down for his dinner on Christmas Eve, and then something crazy happens and he has to go out, and it's kind of like his, not really his origin story, but the origin of all the villains, basically. So throughout the night, you encounter like every villain that he's fought, basically. I think there's 10 or something like this. And you encounter them one by one, and then there's an overarching story. And for me, like, Gotham is snowy for the whole game and stuff. And I remember getting that on Christmas, like opening it Christmas morning, being so excited and then playing it. And I remember the like stomach wrenching feeling when my mom was telling me that we had to go and visit the relatives. And I was like, but no.
I still get a reaction like that. Like, if I was 12 and if I was excited... No, I'm not joking. Not my mom bringing me away somewhere. But, you know, like, if you're going out and you're buying something specific, and be it a new console or a new game, like, right, look, we don't tend to buy physical copies, so I can only kind of correlate it back to even when I bought my lovely new microphone. It's a new gadget, it's a new toy, and once you go out there to with the sole purpose of buying it, and the last thing you want to do is kind of, you know, go around shopping or go deviate. You just want to go home and set it up get it in place so you can just stare at it. Yeah, exactly. You kind of feel like, I just want to go home now. That's something I always kind of... I can even remember when I actually bought my parents brought me in to get the Xbox, and it was like the first thing we got. So we were in Smith's Toys in Cork, and went in, bought the Xbox, and then we were left walking around the city for hours, going for lunch and all this. And I'm like, I can remember, I actually opened it. I started to open it in the car on the way home, and you can kind of smell that kind of, you know, factory seal kind of. It's a weird techie smell. Yeah, I can still remember that actually. Just
I remember that specifically about getting games. So back in the day when you would get like a PS2 game, and there wasn't much of a tutorial in the game, or if there was, it was like also fully laid out in the booklet that came with the game. So you would have all the instructions, what the items mean, all of this stuff. Mm. And I kind of remember picking up games and then reading this booklet, like in the car, then you could be at like your grand's for an hour or two, then you could be somewhere else, you have to go shopping again. And the whole time you're just obsessing over this game and just waiting to play it when you get home. And that's something that doesn't happen so much anymore, because if you now pick up a game, first of all, there's no booklet in the game, right? Unless you're buying an old game from somewhere. And secondly...
They stop putting booklets in them?
There's nothing in a game now. Games don't even have discs anymore.
I mean, I know.
They have... No,
you just
referring
to digital download, Gareth?
No, when you buy a physical copy, there are some games that come with no disc. I think the God of War Special Edition, the recent one, Ragnarok, came with no disc.
So it just comes with a code.
The case is just empty. Yeah, there's just a booklet with the code and the case is empty.
That would annoy me. That's just a waste of plastic.
Yeah. But even if you look at Call of Duty or something, for a long time now, the Call of Duty games have just been a download code. So you just put it in the PlayStation and it reads the download code. There's only like a meg of data or something like this. And there's nothing on this.
So you're just... But like, I mean, once you put in the code, that's it, used, spent.
No, you need the disc every time. It needs to read that code every time. It's the key for playing it. So it doesn't store it and you give it to someone else, then it's needed every time.
It's still clever, I suppose. But
it's like an old PC game, I guess. You have the key that you would have typed in. Remember you had like a key and something
with
it? Oh
my God, I remember that.
So you got the PC game and then you had a key, and then this key had to be typed in. And sometimes you would borrow a game from someone, you'd be like, there's no fucking key! And you couldn't play it, basically. And you had to like Google where to get a key for this that worked and stuff like this. And I think there's some tools now that can like...
Weird.
There's some tools now that can generate keys for old games, but back in the day, you just had a key.
Good luck.
Yeah. And like sometimes you would have got a new PC and then you go to get the game. This happened to me with Age of Mythology. So we had Age of Mythology and I was obsessed with this game. And then we got a new PC and for ages we couldn't find where the code was, so we just couldn't play the game. You know?
Just look at it.
Just look at it. And there wasn't this online community where you could just go, does anyone have a game? Yeah.
Yeah, you're misbehaving. They just took your code.
Funny story about that, actually, with Asian Mythology is I took a sick day from school when I was playing that. And I was obsessed with this game, right? Because I didn't have like a gaming PC. So I just had a PC that could only run things like Theme Park World, Asian Mythology, Age of Empires, even Empire Earth would struggle. I don't know if you remember Empire Earth. Empire Earth was like Age of Mythology, but you went through all the years of civilization. Right up to the future. So you could have like robots and stuff like this. But anyway, Age of Mythology, I started playing. I became like obsessed because I had a really good story as well. And I took like a week off school to play this. And basically I was doing nothing but playing this. And then as soon as like my parents would come home, because I was left at home alone. So as soon as my parents would come home, then I would switch everything off really quick, run to the couch and pretend I was dying sick so I could stay off tomorrow to play the game again, you know? And it was like day three or something. And or day five or four or something like this. And my dad came home and I was like, he was like, how are you feeling? And I was like, oh, still really bad. I don't think I can go back tomorrow. And he was like, come here a sec. And he brought me out to like the hallway where we had a mirror. And he was like, look in the mirror. And I like looked in the mirror and he was like, look at your eyes. And it was just completely red raw.
Yeah, you should be like, you should have turned back and said, see how sick I am?
Dying.
I think it's jaundice. Your eyes are red, not yellow.
I have pink eye. But yeah, that was that's always a memory that sticks with me. So there's a good chance they hit it after that fiasco. But yeah, after that, I was basically sent back to school and then I was banned from playing until my eyes like healed up again. I was probably just playing it and not blinking, something like this.
You could have just said, I'm feeling so sick. I was crying a lot. My eyes are just, you know, irritated. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
there was no getting out of it. The PC roasting hot.
Yeah, debris all around the keyboard. All right, shall we start?
Yeah, let's go. So do you want to start with your number five first?
So my number five would be...
So let's just for everyone listening, let's do 5, 4, 3, 2. We can do our honorable mentions then, and then let's do number one. Okay?
Sounds good.
Okay.
So my first game was Rayman. Did you ever play Rayman? Okay.
I did. I thought it was weird because I had a friend that had Rayman, right? And yeah. None of my main circle had it. And then I had I had some friends that I hung out with, but weren't in my main circle because my main circle was from school, but we didn't all live together, you know? So yeah. Then when I was off for summer or, you know, when I was at home at the weekend, I would also hang out with people more local. And it was the same for them. They would hang out with me while their friend circle was kind of away. Mm. And one of these guys, Kieran.
Yeah.
He was... back then, I thought he was into all this subpar stuff in my eyes, right? So yeah. I was into Pokemon, but he was into Digimon, right? Okay, so I was into Transformers or whatever, and he was into
Digimon.
Yeah, he was into Dragon Ball, right? And there was very few people that were into Digimon and Dragon Ball back then in my school, at least. So I always thought he had the weirder stuff. Basically, he had the more obscure stuff. And Rayman was one of the games he had. Yeah, so he would have been into Dragon Ball, Digimon, all these kind of weird brands. And then I always associated Rayman with being this subpar.
Kind of foreign, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, well, kind of weird, like a knockoff, you know?
Yeah, I think, I don't even know how I actually came to get Rayman. I think there was probably a game demo that came with a magazine. But it was I can't even remember what the whole premise of the story was. And I had to look it up. And it was kind of you're in kind of a magical world and there's a pro tune. So there's an orb that gets stolen by a baddie and then you're basically just navigating through the levels to get it. But it's just it was one of those kind of early platformers. Now, I don't even know that it was actually before Crash Bandicoot came out. So it was kind of one of the first kind of platformers I would have kind of been experienced to. But I mean, just from sound design, it was actually quite a good game. You actually had abilities. You could throw a punch, your fist would kind of travel to knock out enemies, or you could fly with your hair. There were just kind of little things. But I mean, it's kind of a game as well, that kind of a completionist kind of aspect where you kind of had to, you had kind of secondary characters in the game that you had to break out of cages. So you had to kind of find them all on each level to get kind of max points and it's actually I've actually kind of nearly bought all these kind of, they remastered a lot of them. So all the games now, I'm sure you're probably going to mention one or two as well, which I've actually rebought with the hopes to kind of get back into them now.
Yeah.
So what was your fifth game?
Just for the Rayman side, that was almost to me like a 2D collectathon type thing. So similar to Crash Bandicoot. Crash Bandicoot was a bit more 3D, but it was like a 2D collectathon, which was quite strange back in the day, but it was good. I also heard a rumor that the reason Rayman has no limbs is because of the limitations of the PS1 back in the day, because the game was so graphically beautiful in the background that he originally had limbs and then they had to cut them because the graphics couldn't handle it. I don't know how bullshit this is, but I remember hearing that back in the day.
They was out in PlayStation 1, was it? Back in 1995.
It was the early days.
It's one of those games, I think, true to form. It's just it's an honest kind of game. It's something I kind of want to kind of delve back into.
It was very difficult.
It wasn't easy.
Back in the day.
No.
Crash was much easier.
Crash was, even though Crash Was Chris Crash a lot a side stroller a lot of the time? When did it kind of? It definitely had elements where you were definitely going forward or like to, away from the screen and towards the screen.
Yeah. So Crash was 2D mostly. Same kind of thing, but it had levels where it was 3D, like a boulder would be chasing you and then you're in 3D.
Yeah. I remember that.
But this was similar to like what they had in Hercules or Tarzan or something like this, you know?
Yeah.
So like in the Hercules games, mostly side-scrolling, and then they had times where you were running away from the camera to the camera.
Yeah.
But I think Crash was the first one where it really felt 3D and not like a 2D thing pasted over a 3D looking background, you know, if you get me. So my number five was, and I know we talked about this a little bit already, MDK.
See, and the thing is, the minute you said it the last day, you mentioned it. Like, I actually, and to be fair, I actually haven't actually re-looked it up. But I just, like you said, like a black, slick, kind of oil slick alien was the only thing I can remember. And I can remember just explosions, and that's it. I actually had the game, and I can't even remember, was I actually able to run the demo? But I know I didn't actually physically own a copy of it, but I was looking for it. Like,
yeah, yeah. So I think one of the things I remember very vividly is it's like the guy in it, the main character, is like, you know, black, slick, like latex-looking guy. Really skinny, and then has like a cone head, right? Do you remember this? It's like a beak, basically. And the beak, like in the very first cutscene, he drops down and he's wearing this big beak, and then it's like films him from behind, and he basically takes off the beak, and the beak is his gun.
How weird.
Yeah, and you have this mode where you can use a sniper rifle, and the sniper rifle is that he puts the beak back on his head, and then you're in sniper rifle mode.
How weird.
Yeah, it's really weird.
But was it what kind of like camera aspect was the game? Was it like a third person or was this?
It was third person and it was very early 3D, so it was kind of floaty, you know? There wasn't much like weight to the character. He was kind of floating about the place, if you get me. I don't know how to explain that.
Hovering around the place, yeah.
It was very much like, you know, you'd press left and he'd be moving max speed straight away, you know?
Oh, weird. Yeah.
Yeah. But tell me this, do you know what MDK stands for?
No, not a hope.
Nobody does. Go for officially.
It. Oh, yeah.
Nobody
knows.
Nobody knows.
Good setup there, Gar. I thought there it was is... like, oh, he's gonna answer the question. It's like,
no, I just wanna put a bit of mystery out there. So there's two theories, right? One is that it's murder, death, kill, which all makes right. sense because the whole game is super violent. There's another theory that it has like a comedy title, and the comedy title is Mission Deliver Kindness.
Murder, Death, Kill. Well, see, Murder, Death, Kill, that's just three. I wouldn't say Murder, Death, Kill.
I like Mission Deliver Kindness better. I think it's funnier.
Mission Deliver what?
Kindness.
Yeah, that's what I thought you said.
But with this game, the reason it's so nostalgic for me, right, is I mentioned this on the last podcast that I got donated this chunky PS1 from my uncle, right? So yeah. Back in the day, there was a lot of like, you don't have this anymore because everyone knows that gaming is worth something now. But back in the day, you would have people that have like a PS1 and they were like, oh, I'm not really playing it. You know, give it to whoever there. That's fine. You know, the nephew or the niece or something. And basically, I was up at my uncle's house and I was telling him that I really want a PS1. And then he was like, oh, I have one upstairs in a box there. And I was just like trembling. I was like, what? Get it now?
Just in a box.
He couldn't find it then, and I went home, and then like 2 hours later, he showed up to the house and he dropped it off and he was like, there it is. And I was like, I don't know. I was like ready to explode. I was like heavy breathing, sweating. I was like, oh, get it on, turn it on. And I basically got a few games with this. So there was a couple of games came with it. It wasn't many, but it was like Formula One and there was some other stupid games and there was like a demo disc or something. But then what happened next is that my other uncle had a friend who had a PS1 and he had a binder full of games and he was like, oh, I'm not really playing it anymore. You can give the binder to your nephew there, and came up with this binder. And then this binder was like the games that I shouldn't have been playing. Like Fear Effect was there and Fear Effect, G-Police, MDK was in there. Syndicate Wars. I don't know if you remember that. GTA 2 was in there. And like, you know, my parents didn't know what was going on. They were just used to us playing Sonic and so on. And that was when I plugged in all the games and like some of them, like Syndicate Wars, I just didn't like straight away. It was too complicated, no interest. And then GTA also didn't really enjoy. It was top down in the old days.
I remember actually playing, now when I say playing it recently, it was probably, could be 10 years ago, playing, I think it was GTA London. And
maybe that was it.
Like when,
maybe that
but
was
like when
I
you
had,
when
GTA
you
London.
When you died, it never, like when you died in GTA London, you weren't wasted anymore. You were brown bread, or there are,
oh, really
different.
No,
yeah,
I didn't,
there was all
I
like UK
that.
There was UK slang put into it. I just remember like top down, like how did we manage to not crash? Like we probably did, probably crashed horrifically, but just yeah, such a weird transition,
I think, with the
going from GTA 2 to 3, where 3 became 3D.
I mean, that was a huge leap. That was like light years ahead. But I think with the controls, I think we just got used to these janky controls because you didn't know any different. So it wasn't like you played something like Apex where the movement was so precise and lovely and then you went back to GTA. So you just didn't know anything.
Yeah.
You had Pokemon and then you had this and you were like, this is amazing.
Yeah, I suppose it's easier going from what would you perceive to be kind of difficult top-down to kind of a more free, airy, breezy, 3D kind of.
Yeah.
Rather than going back
to, if you
the
play
way.
A modern top down now, it doesn't feel like GTA, you know?
No. Just so, like it's an entirely different game.
I think it's a product of its time in a way. But yeah, this game just takes me back to being in my bedroom with my first CRT, like on the dresser or whatever, just, you know, randomly thrown there. And having this PS1, and mainly like when I put in MDK, this was like something that just like hooked me straight away. You know, I was totally into it, even though it was really difficult and I didn't know what to do half the time. I just love like the world, the environment, so much going on. And yeah, that led me then to renting the PS1 games. And I remember playing Command & Conquer, as I mentioned, for that whole weekend then. So yeah, that's when
I remember like renting, like I can't even remember what games I would have rented, like but I kind of use renting games as a try before you buy kind of deal.
I was the opposite, I think, because I didn't really understand the cost. So like, because my parents would have rented it. So we'd go down and we'd rent some movies and a game and stuff. And for me, I wasn't allowed to buy a game, but I was allowed to rent it 10 times in a row, which is the same price as buying it, you know?
I suppose. And I suppose, look, I suppose actually it kind of made sense when you rent games, because at least, you know, if it's an 8-hour length or a 12-hour game, which was probably kind of the average back then, you'd have finished it in a weekend.
And you could finish it, maybe not in the first weekend, but maybe in the second weekend. And I think if you didn't finish it, you were anyway hard stuck because there was no Google. So like, there was no amount of time would get you through that game, basically.
Yeah, true. Shall we go on to our fourth game?
Yeah, go ahead. Your fourth.
All right, so my four would have obviously been Crash Bandicoot. I'm sure you have it on yours too. Like Crash Bandicoot, again, I suppose it's kind of for similar reasons. I suppose they're kind of games that, when I first got the PlayStation, there were kind of games that we got fairly early on. I think when it kind of have it written there, like Crash Bandicoot came out in 1996, and we wouldn't have gotten it when it was brand new. So I'd say probably 98, 99, and it's just one of those games, I think, that you kind of TV hogged. You kind of play, and it's like, no, I'll complete this level, and then you'd jump on and do the other level, or you try to do it every time you die. But I remember like the sheer frustration in that game. But
Were you playing with a memory card, or do you remember? Because you would have TV hogged it then to get as far as possible in the game, because you knew when you got off the TV you had to start the game again.
No, I'd say we had memory cards. I remember, sure, like even in games, the cases used to actually have memory card slots, didn't they? You'd be able to actually take your memory
PS1,
cards around.
No, but in the PS2 they came out then. So GameCube,
that's
PS2
when they came out.
Had them, and Xbox was obviously integrated. So,
what would you think is the best Crash Bandicoot in the series?
I played recently the Insane trilogy, and herself played through a good bit of it as well. And I think I like 2, personally.
Two is one of my favorites. That's like the kind of the winter aspect and the polar bears.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And you get
and then
to kind
three
of
was
ride around
warped.
In a polar bear.
3 had a lot of like races and set pieces and stuff, which I didn't like as much. But 2, I think, is like core Crash Bandicoot for me.
It was warped one where you got like the portals and you're going into different worlds.
And you had also you were flying like spaceships in one part, you were like on a motorbike in one part, cars, stuff like this. Whereas in 2, I think you rode like the polar bear was about the only thing. So it was a lot more core Crash Bandicoot for me, I think.
Again, like I said, I have all these games bought. I'm just like, I have them downloaded. I just haven't
Do you have the Insane Trilogy for Crash Bandicoot?
Whatever one that was released there not so long ago.
Okay, yeah.
So I have that, I have Spyro, I have Rayman, obviously. I'm surprised they actually, now I know like they have Crash Team Racing, but I'm surprised they actually haven't done kind of a multiplayer Crash Bandicoot where you could actually have like, you know, competing against each other. Like in,
are you talking
in an actual
like,
level.
In an actual level, okay. Because there was Crash Bash, which was like Mario Party for Crash Bandicoot, basically. Did you play this?
Never heard of it. No.
I picked it up on the PS1. And I was like, Crash Bash, new Crash game, you know, and you had no Google, you had no nothing back then. So it was like, you'd pick up a game expecting it to be something and then it wasn't, you know.
Oh, no.
I was like begging my dad to get me this new Crash game. I was like, nobody has this. It's going to be amazing, you know. Got home, plugged it in, and it was basically fucking Mario Party, right? And I was playing like on my own at the time. And I was just like, I remember just being so miserable and just playing through this game, not even enjoying it. And my dad being like, well, is it good? I'd be like, yeah, it's amazing. And it was probably okay. But, you know, when you're expecting a fully fledged Crash game and then you have Mario Party, you're like, what is this shit? You know? And that happened quite a lot.
Crash Team Racing?
I have the remake Crash Nitro Kart.
I have that too. I think we should organize an old session. Yeah,
absolutely.
Great remake. Right, so give me your fourth game.
Okay, my fourth, staying on the topic of Crash, but mine's a different game. Mine is Mine's Crash Team Racing. So this would have been my first kart racer, obviously, because we didn't have any friends that had a lot of like Nintendo games. I only had one that had the N64, and he had mostly like GoldenEye and wrestling games and stuff. He had Mario 64, but no like kart racing or anything. And I remember we got into like this craze of playing Crash Team Racing. So there was my core group of friends. And we were basically just like moving from house to house until we got kicked out. And then as soon as we got kicked out, we would pack up the memory cards, pack up Crash Team Racing, go out and try to go to someone else's house to play because we all had a PS1. And I remember one friend, Luke, basically he had this massive playroom, right? It was huge. And I still remember it was like a bungalow house. And then this playroom was like at the back of the house and it had like wooden beams, like... It was kind of like conservatory style everywhere. And there was one wall and it just had this massive TV and a PS1, like loads of games and the couch right in front of it. And we would go there and the room was so big that like some of us would be doing something else in the room, like playing foosball or something while people are playing Crash Team Racing. And I can still remember there was like the Mr. Frosty snow cone maker in the corner. There was like this.
And you know what? He's one of these people now you'd say, you know, you're spoiled, right? He's like, I'm not spoiled.
Yeah. He was definitely spoiled, but he was very down to earth about it. I think he didn't act like a spoiled kid or anything because I had no idea he had this kind of a setup at home until I went there. And I suppose to him, it was just normal. You know, he was thinking we were living in poverty.
A snow cone maker. Yeah.
And he had...
What do you mean you don't have help? You don't have someone to...
You don't have a butler?
Where's my service bell?
And he also had like loads of these toys, like the science kits and like candy makers and stuff like this. All the toys that you would use once and then you couldn't get a refill for the candy or whatever or a snow cone maker anywhere. So then it would just be this like useless thing sitting in the corner. But he had a lot of that stuff. And like, you know, my first engineering kit and my first science experiment and stuff like this.
All the stuff parents that cost, have aspirations for him.
Yeah. All the stuff that cost a fortune. Like, that takes me back to that like huge playroom and just being there. And I remember this was a big rumor back in the day as well about Crash that you would play. And sometimes there was a black like Shadow Racer kart would appear. When you're playing in time trial, you could never catch it. It was just ahead of you all the time. And then before it crossed the finish line on the last lap, it would disappear. And this was supposed to be like a ghost in the machine. And my friend would tell us that he sees it all the time and stuff. And of course, it was just complete bullshit. Never existed. So yeah, that's my number four, Crash Team Racing. And I think Nitro Kart is a very faithful remake to that. I didn't play much online, so I think it's like plagued with microtransactions, but I don't know anything about that. I just played it local.
What game isn't plagued with microtransactions?
Yeah, you know, it's to be successful, you got to have Gotta make money.
Gotta bring in that money.
Yeah.
There's actually a subtle nod to, you know, the boulder when you're in Crash and you're trying to outrun the boulders.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It's obviously a nod to Indiana Jones. But no, definitely the second in the series is my favorite. I never actually played much. I remember playing Mario Kart in a buddy's house. But other than that, and that was actually like, you know, our deal to get all four of us in the same room to play it. But when we used, and the thing is, you'd have a TV which is only yay big, so you'd probably have like 7 inches of screen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To play on.
But I think the graphics lent themselves well to that, because I have now the AmberNIC where I play most of these original PS1 games.
Yeah.
And it's just a little handheld, tiny little screen, like smaller than a phone. And when you put the PS1 on the TV, it looks like dog shit. Because it's like on a, you know, a 50-inch 4K TV, it just looks horrendous, right? But when you put it on the small handheld now, it looks really good. It looks like it was made to be a handheld game, you know? Yeah, it looks really good. So I think it worked because the graphics were so simple. You had this tiny screen. And if you go now to play something like the new Call of Duty and you go to a tiny screen, you can't even play it. You know, it's impossible. You can't.
Must send me on a link for that thing, actually. Like, do you have to like load them on like ROMs, is it?
Yeah, you just load on ROMs. So it's just an SD card. You put it in the computer, load on ROMs, and then everything works. There's like a sorting system. So you put it into the right folder, and then you have like an interface when you start it, and you like scroll through your gaming library, and works perfectly. And you can do save states, you can rewind, forward the game, whatever.
And
you
can put Pokemon on today, can you?
Yeah. I'm currently playing Pokemon RGB Pure, which is RGB Pure is like a fan-made Pokemon game. So it's basically someone took the original and then modded the original. And basically in RGB Pure, you can catch all 150 Pokemon from the original, right? Without like trading with anyone, without going to a different game. Plus, he worked in like all the rumors back in the day. So you had a lot of rumors for the game, like Mew being under the truck at the SSN and stuff like this. And that is now in the game. You can catch Mew under the truck. Like, he worked in all these rumors. And there's also like added levels. Like in Cinnabar, there's like a volcano place now where you can go through and fight loads of stuff. And yeah, I haven't got to it yet. I didn't look up too much because I don't want to spoil. But apparently it's like all the rumors are there, which is exciting. So yeah,
I might try and have to indulge.
Just and it's also like made to be a bit more difficult. So like the gym battles, you don't like walk through if you pick the right Pokemon anymore. It's a lot more tactical, basically. So it's pretty good.
Like I said, it is a kind of a franchise I'd like to actually, like I only ever, like I said, I very little exposure to the actual games. Why you'd be addicted to the animated series for it. But and the same with Digimon. Was there Digimon games? I presume there was.
Yeah.
I never got off the ground with them.
I don't know about the Game Boy, but there was PS1 Digimon games and stuff.
You didn't play them?
And my friend had them, the friend that had all the off-brand stuff. And of course, I remember the Digimon
off-brand,
one.
Off-brand. Yeah. It's a brand.
It's off-brand.
Off-brand.
It's not Pokemon, it's off-brand, okay?
No, but like Pokemon definitely is a series. Like I said, I can remember kind of doing the intro where you get to pick your first Pokemon. And
yeah.
I think maybe like the first few Pokemon I've caught. And I'd say that was pretty much it. I never actually got to be able to sit down because I was kind of only playing off friends' games. But like that, you wouldn't play it to save over their stuff. So
yeah, sure.
No, definitely something I kind of want to delve into. Your third game. Should I do my third?
You do your third. Go back to you.
Medal of Honor Frontline. I actually, when I was looking up Medal of Honor, I never realized. I thought that the Medal of Honor I played was a lot earlier, and I was kind of surprised. So this actually came out in 2002, Frontline. So Frontline was the one with D-Day, where you're coming in and you're doing the beach landing.
Yeah, sure.
And obviously I expected the game to look dated, but my God, is it dated. But I remember I used to play this game to death. Like, I used to know every level, where every enemy was. I used to just go through with a Lee Enfield sniper rifle, and I'd just cleave the map, clear everything. But there was actually, it's just, you know what, my most memorable thing about that game was just the music in it. It was all kind of orchestral.
Yeah, it was very, like, army band drum bass, wasn't it?
Yeah, kind of like real. Yeah. But I remember, like, at the very end of the game as well, like, the end credits, they actually show the live video of the actual orchestra.
Really?
And it's phenomenal. Ooh. There's a child singer in it. We'll link it or we'll have a look there later.
Yeah.
But the it's just mad when you kind of see the kid singing his piece, and it's just like, it really kind of resonates. Like, it just literally, you're there playing it again for the first time. And but I just remember like that game being such like a shock, like, you know, you're thinking, you, this is the like cutting edge graphics.
Do you remember the first time you played the opening, the beach level?
Yeah, like I said, like a fucking, you know, you kind of get off into the water. Like I said, and I actually only watched the intro to it again, someone doing a playthrough recently, and it was just like, still, like, it still holds up. Like, you're kind of this slow motion kind of in the water, you see bullets ripping through it, and it's mad. Like, it's, I do remember it being a lot busier in my head, but like how sparse Same. The NPCs there. Same. Yeah, I was just like, wow, I actually thought, but I remember, like, that being really hard to get up to the, to get past the gun turrets. Like,
yeah, I remember, like, I wonder how much of our imagination played a part in gaming when we were younger, you know? You know, because you would be used to playing with toys and just making it up in your head, and then you would play a video game. And I had the same as you. Like, I remember playing that in my friend's house, the beach level, and I remember playing it again and again and again because it was so difficult just to get past these turrets and get off the beach, basically. And in my mind, there was, like, people running everywhere, people dying, planes flying past, and when I replayed it on the PS2 recently, it's like, you know, you have like three people running beside you. There's like two cannons firing at you, and then there's like one plane flies past.
Mad. So
it's weird. It's weird. I just wonder how much of it was like due to our imagination when we played these games as well.
Like, I remember actually even like just, and it was actually, like I said, when I was watching the playthrough and your man just kind of loaded up the game, or he's at the start menu. It's just like, the start menu, if you can remember, it's just it's like the war room desk. You have this kind of really kind of military kind of soundtrack going in the background, and you kind of, you know, you're moving around. So like new game or load game, and next thing it's like, you know, there'll be documents kind of shuffled up. So as you pan across, it's, everything is interactable, but it's just like, it's just kind of a nice of games don't do that anymore.
The only game that does that recently is the new Metro. So in the new Metro, you're in a train for most of the game, and in Metro Exodus, and that has like the same thing where you're looking at a bunch of screens and you're flicking from one to the next to go through the menu. You know?
I like that
dossier style one is missing though, where you go through the dossiers for the level, like in GoldenEye or in Medal of Honor or something.
Yeah,
I miss that.
It's those kind of games. Like, it's just old school. It's just I think it's real. A game focus, like, you know, it's not
I must send you over a few PS2s and stuff, because I was looking like how much you could pick one up for in Ireland, and they're either like not available or they're expensive, and like so like it was like £100 starting for like any PS2 that's for sale, and here at the moment you'll get like a slim with like 10 games for like £50. All you'd have to do is basically change the plug or just put an adapter in the wall, and it works the same. So like if you want stuff, just let me know and I'll send them over, because the market here is way better, I would say.
I'm still trying to weigh up what I buy.
I think I sent you, I bought the OG Xbox, and I bought like 30 games with it. That was like €80. They're good games, you know?
That's nuts. Like, I was actually looking up, and I was looking at the OG Xbox. I was, no joke, hand in my heart, I was actually looking at the OG Xbox last night, and I was like, on Amazon, I think it's €152. And the main reason why was there was a game, I'm not sure, do you ever play Second Sight? Did it ring a bell?
Second Sight, no.
What is it? It's actually a phenomenal game, but basically you are I think because it kind of flashes back and forth, and if I can remember rightly, I think you're like a soldier who gets injured, and instead of being kind of treated medically, you're experimented on. So you kind of wake up in a facility, and you actually, you have abilities. So you're wounded. You can see scars all over your head where they done surgeries. You're only wearing trousers. Your torso is exposed, and you're kind of wrapped up. You're bandaged.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you were actually pronounced dead, but you wake up on a stretcher anyway, and you start off with telekinesis. So you're trying to struggle to get out of this room. Next thing, you just suddenly, the door becomes interactable and you can telekinetically open it, and you just start to develop these powers over the next level or two. And it's just like, it's one of those games, like when you were talking about like Time Splitters or my game, which was Time Shift. And it's just that kind of like, real kind of, or PsyOps was another one that I used to like be addicted to as a child. Yeah, but kind of the same kind of premise, like you can kind of interact with the environment and you can, you know, astral project yourself to interact with objects that you otherwise wouldn't be able to get to, or you can kind of make yourself invisible, or there's just a lot of really cool abilities for it. And it was like really such a phenomenal game.
It was really like advanced stuff back in the day. Like when you think now that you see this stuff in Apex Legends or in Titanfall and you're like, this is cool, but games had this like 20 years ago, more. You know?
It's nuts. Crazy. And that's actually, because there's actually one, I suppose I'll mention my next game, so, because it kind of falls in line, would be kind of Metal Gear Solid, right? And okay. Like those games were always ahead of their time. I think Metal Gear Solid actually is kind of, especially like the second one more so, but like you remember like in Metal Gear Solid 2, like you could shoot an enemy's radio on their hip,
yeah,
and you could disable their radio. Like they had lots of like little micro kind of systems in place that like they just don't do it in modern games. Like
there was also like the level of stealth and the way that worked, the stealth mechanics basically was like nothing else at the time.
Yeah.
And that was just on the level like of even, like Splinter Cell or something like this. And back then you had nothing comparable as far as I know in the stealth genre.
Nothing to even to that level. Like, I mean, there's you can look up a video like on Metal Gear Solid and like what they've actually, they compare, you know, games to modern games, or like you might get like a Far Cry comparison. So you might get like Far Cry 1 or Far Cry 2 had X, Y, and Z, and that Far Cry 6, even though it looks better, had nothing. Like I think there was actually, it was only kind of a side track because I know off my head now, I know the Far Cry one, but I know they do it in cross comparison with Metal Gear Solid as well. But in Far Cry 2, for example, like you can, like there was water physics there, you know, mm-hmm. And in the newest one, like when you're shooting into the water or you throw a grenade in, like there'll actually be kind of, you know, environmental kind of effect, you know, you'll see the water into the air, sure. Or you'll see the rounds hitting in the water, or if you're shooting and you'll actually see one bullet casings on the floor or kind of bullet rounds indoors, we'll say, and they stay there. Yes, the newest games, which should have the rendering and processing capability to remain, they just either don't show up or there's less destruction. It's the same, like it's just like games back in then, like because we were discussing Red Faction in the last episode, like fully destructible environment, or when you think like Battlefield Bad Company, you know, you were taking out buildings with RPGs and grenades, and it's like we seem to be going back in time. Stuff looks better, but it just seems to be so like much more basic. Like
when you think back to these destructible environments, right, and you think of the new ones, they have like a very good facade, and then behind that is just empty space. You know, if you're looking at a wall, let's say the wall is rendered very well, but then behind the wall is completely empty, right? But if you take Red Faction or you take Battlefield Bad Company, if you take those destructible environments, if you blow a hole in the wall, the game then has to render that whole hole with the surface of whatever material it is each time, which is crazy when you think about it, you know, from such a limited console, what they could have done.
It's just like I said, and just like I'd love to know exactly what actually components wise, what actually made up a PlayStation 1, like what is the PC equivalent? Like what would you need to, you know, how much RAM is in a PlayStation 1? Was it probably not, like not 128 megabytes or something?
There's a good video I can send you, which is looking at like the technological leaps basically. So like the percentage of power, processing power that the consoles went up. And like if you look at like the PS1 compared to like the PS2 basically, it was like 22 times the processing power. Then the PS3 was like 4 times the PS2. And then compared to the PS1, that was like colossal, like nearly 100. And then when you get into like the Xbox One, the Xbox One X, the Xbox Series X, the increase is so small compared to this percentage you had back in the day, you know?
This huge leap. And that's the thing, like that's kind of like frustrating as well. It's just like they constantly talk about like even like the Series X like being as powerful as it is, and it's still, you know, some games are still hard locked to 30 FPS or you're just like, how, why are we struggling here, guys? All right, so back to Metal Gear Solid.
Like, so why is that so nostalgic to you, Metal Gear Solid? What's the core memories you have?
It's just, and to be honest, again, it kind of comes back to my brother. Like that was kind of the one thing. Like if I was to categorically say, what game can you remember most playing with my brother? Like, and that would be it, Metal Gear Solid. And I remember even like getting it to completion so we could get like stealth. Do you know, like if you complete if you don't submit, or you do submit on when you're getting in a tortured scene,
mm-hmm.
You can unlock stealth camo, active camouflage at the end of the game. Or you get the bandana, which gives you unlimited ammo for
this was
every
the
weapon.
This was the camo that was like in the initial trailer, right? So as the opening of the trailer, when he's running across the bridge in the rain, and then there's like he's completely see-through, and then he whips off this cloak and it's Snake, and he's like the camouflage is gone. Then do you remember?
I'm
going to
say yes. No, I don't remember it, but I'm going to say yes.
So you could get this camo in the game that you would be.
Do you not know that?
Person. No.
Oh my
man, God. Man, we never got to the end of any games.
That's true. I know that.
This was in Metal Gear Solid 2, right?
No, Metal Gear Solid. Yeah, I think you can get them in all games, but I know.
Really?
In Metal Gear Solid 1, you could get stealth camo.
No, because I remember seeing it for the trailer of Metal Gear Solid 2 and it blew my mind. So I remember that I wouldn't have had it in Metal Gear Solid 1.
I think you can get it I think you can get optic camo in all games, if I'm not mistaken.
I didn't have it.
I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah.
But. And it's brilliant, like, because you just have such a laugh, because you kind of like do like a new playthrough, but you'll mm-hmm. have active camo, so like you could literally pop off, like it's click on, click off, like, so you can go up to an enemy and just like expose yourself, for lack of a better word.
I know what kind of Metal Gear Solid you were playing, Jimmy.
Yeah, well, yeah, no. You can click it back on and there you go, as in you're gone, out of sight. And there was the same thing as well, like I think it was in Metal Gear Solid 2, they put on uniforms, so you could like, you'd get uniforms for different, depending on where you are in the level, they'd wear a different type of camouflage.
Ah, okay, so you'd kill someone or knock them out, take their uniform.
Yeah, or you'd find the uniform somewhere and you could like, you know, run up to him dressed as Raiden and you mm-hmm. knock out your man. And then when he wakes up, he gets alerted and you run around the corner, equip the uniform, and you can walk back.
That's crazy.
And you're yeah. So it used to be a really handy thing like that. Now, if you're going up, you equip the uniform, you can get up nice and close. And shoot the radio on the hip. And that's like again, it's stuff you don't see much of in games. Like, I suppose the only game that kind of consistently does it is Hitman. Which you can get disguises.
I've never played through Hitman like, properly, by the way. I thought you should know that.
I have. The Contracts was my first Hitman game, and that should have been on my list, actually. We'll put that on the list.
Okay.
So it'll be a semi-honorable mention. So Hitman, mm-hmm. like, I used to be addicted. One and two, I think I found difficult to get into. But Contracts, when Contracts came out, it was probably the more kind of current kind of setup. Like, it was more kind of
mm-hmm.
before, it was kind of real mission kind of driven, where like you had to, you know, do A, B, C to get to D.
It was more set pieces rather than sandbox stuff.
Yeah, like you'd had a level, it's not like as open world as it now currently, but you still could kind of attack it, you know, a few different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But in Contracts, it was just like Hitman Contracts. You'd actually had like an actual base of operations, and you'd be able to collect all the weapons in the game, and they'd be actually all kind of displayed in your lair.
Ah, oh, cool.
And which is something that was kind of like something extra that you kind of worked towards, like, how do I get this weapon or this disguise? And just the music for Hitman Contracts was phenomenal. Jasper Kidd, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Was the composer, and a lot of like the minute you play that, it'll like there's the and it's weird, like there's actually like a mission in it, you're going into like kind of a CD kind of sex dungeon kind of BDSM kind of thing, you're like, I'm a child. But you're going you're going in and putting on gimp masks and everything, it's like, oh, it was such an experience. But yeah, like it's in like kind of I remember there's kind of like a butcher. It's like in a meat or kill house, you know, like for where they kill cattle.
Like a slaughterhouse.
Yeah. So you have like, you know, S hooks that you can pull down and use constructively.
Jesus Christ.
Or you have, you know, the cattle. There's like a cattle rod. It's
prod.
Not, 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 Not a project. I don't even know what it's called, but basically it's like a pneumatic spike that you can.
Yeah, I know this one.
So that was the weapon of choice. Yeah, you kind of wonder
that's
where
horrific.
People develop.
I wonder where all this violence comes from.
Yeah, yeah. I walked into this room and I can already improvise how I'm going to do it.
Yeah, but with Metal Gear Solid, I would have played it quite a lot. I never owned them back in the day, but it was, I mentioned in the last podcast, I had this friend whose dad gamed and he had all like the edgier games and he had every Metal Gear Solid the second they came out. And I remember playing it there and the stealth felt like terrifying back then. It was really scary to do, like to hide from people and stuff. And it just felt real because you didn't understand how the mechanics worked back then. And now when you replay it, it's not quite the same because you know kind of how to work the enemies a bit more. You kind of learn it easier, let's say. So you don't feel as threatened, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like probably like the best sound design in a game. Just like every level has its own kind of music and feeling.
You can still hear like that.
It's just...
You hear that screech alert sound and then the do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah, do-do-do. And then obviously the sheer frustration every time you die and you're like, snake, snake, snake.
Yeah, you're like mashing the X button.
skip. And I think actually, if I'm not mistaken, the first they released two versions of the first one, and I think in one of them you can't skip any dialogue, so it's actually quite frustrating when you've got these long conversational pieces. It's not that you can skip over it; you can just skip that bulk of text.
And then you have to skip every
and you,
time.
You can read it, because if you're reading it quicker than what he's speaking.
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure.
Or if the fact that if you die and then you have to go back into the dialogue piece, you have to constantly...
Yeah.
But like those, like probably the most iconic bosses in games as well, you know, like Sniper Wolf and Raven.
Yeah, yeah.
And
every boss was like...
Liquid Snake.
Every boss was incredible in that. And I don't know, they felt like so grand, you know? The bosses and that, even though you're just fighting like a guy with a revolver or, you know, a woman with a sniper. But looking back on it in the game, you felt very human because you were only a couple shots away from dying, basically. So because you felt very human, the boss, the stakes always felt very high, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, I think when you're kind of going up against these kind of characters, like, and it's again, they're so different. Like, I mean, they're different environments. Like with Ocelot, you're kind of running around trying to set off C4s to catch him out. There is a trick to it. Apparently, there's a particular way you run around that you'll always catch him just as he's about to shoot you. So there's kind of like little. It's not even like proper exploits. I suppose it's just more someone
learning
who's just
the pattern,
observant. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, Ocelot used his ricochet rounds and stuff. And but I remember like the cyborg ninja, like he was
invisible for his fight, wasn't he?
Yeah. I remember him being extremely difficult.
Yeah,
and like now that I had replayed it recently and it's like piece of piss. Just
I don't think it's easy when you go back with the skills you've learned over the years. But I remember getting through the bosses, and none of them were so scary that I would be freaked out. But then I got to the level where you have to fight the tank. Do you remember?
The tank
this?
Was a pain. I like I said, I only played it recently, and I'm actually up where I'm at now in the game. I'm up towards the last, up to the Metal Gear X, or Metal Gear X. Is it Rex? Yeah, Metal Gear Rex. I'm up to there, but I'm actually, I've stopped playing it. I actually loaded up only like last week. I stopped playing it so long, so I played it like consistently, got up to there in a couple of couple of days, and I stopped playing for a few weeks. And now that I'm loaded it back up again, it's like, all right, we'll have another go off it. I'm lost. I don't know where I am in the map, so I don't know which way I'm going. So I must look up actually a guide, and now know that we can actually do that.
Yeah.
But I think the tank, man, I like that. I actually died so much.
I would get to the tank and then I would just say, yeah, we'll go back to the earlier levels there. So, and just like, I would just cop out of the game.
Ignore
and be like, no, can't deal with this. And just back to the levels I knew then.
I kept getting him really low. And then next thing, the tank would turn on its axis and flatten me, kill me. That's what kept happening. Because obviously you get up close, you just keep chucking grenades.
Man,
up.
I was just scared to get near the thing.
It's a tank, Jamie.
I was just hiding behind rocks, like, don't know what to do.
I remember as well, like to get the access keys for the PAL keys, you have to get them at different temperatures. You have to get one like super heated and one super cold and one. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, you probably didn't get that far, did you? You need to get the. So basically, all right, are you? I suppose kind of a semi spoiler, I think.
Then
so
don't
I won't
spoil
say it.
Don't spoil it.
But there's basically keys in the game that you have to get and retrieve. Mm-hmm. And you have to, in order to slot them in the control room, it's the same key,
mm-hmm.
but it changes shape if it's hot or if it's cold.
Okay, so you get one temperature, put it in, then you have to go find the
you
other
have to
temperature,
get, so you have to kind
in.
Of traverse the map quickly, because if you have a key that's super hot, it can be cold or room temperature by the time you get back to the control room.
That's a crazy mechanic for back in the day.
So it's cool. Just discussing a little bit more, like Metal Gear Solid, you know, for the first game, you're fighting Psycho Mantis. Like the implementation of having to, you know, the fact that he could read your mind, most mind blowing kind of thing. So you had to like figure out how to, you know, to. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So he'd read your mind. So you had to obviously go into controller. You'd use the controller part two.
So
that he wouldn't read your mind. And it's not...
I was doing it in like drips and drabs. So I would do a bit and then I would miss some parts because my friend was playing on his own. And then I would be like back for the next part, you know. So I would miss like parts of the game.
You'd miss a little, yeah.
Yeah.
But that to me is still like a hard... It's a hard game to play. Only... Well, I suppose you can go into kind of like a first person view still mm-hmm. in the first one.
But only like statically.
Just from the angle you're... Yeah, just the angle that you're playing, it's a difficult game because the enemy can see you before you see them
sometimes.
You know, whichever way the camera is.
Especially with like this tank level where the tank is miles away, you don't see it basically.
Yeah.
You know.
You feel it though.
Yeah.
All right, anyway, what's your next game?
Let's push along. So I'll do my 3 and 2. You can do a few quick honorable mentions and then we'll do our ones. Okay. My next one is, I don't know, I think you played this. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time.
Did you play the original Prince of Persia? The OG one?
I didn't. I played it since, like the side-scrolling, like old school one, but I didn't play it at the time. I thought at the time that this was the first incarnation of the Prince of Persia game. You know, this is Prince of Persia, not realizing it was like a legacy for years and years and years.
We had the OG one, and again, just like me, my brother and sister mm-hmm. sitting down to play it, and just like... Man, like we never got far in it. We just kept dying. But yeah, just like even again, it's just, you know,
it had the same kind of atmosphere. It had the same kind of. It didn't have the time aspect, obviously, the reversing time and stuff like this. But it had like the same mechanics of like climbing things, platforms dropping away, spikes being under them, this kind of thing.
Yeah, or you had to kind of like, and obviously, if spikes were coming up through the floor, like they trigger no matter what. So you had to kind of step into them.
Yeah, sure.
So that when they came up, you weren't kind of struck by them.
Like in Tomb Raider.
Doors,
in Tomb Raider, you had to walk through the spikes.
Super slowly. Or you had the doors that kind of, you know, blades that kind of came down.
Yeah. But
you had to try and find your weapon.
With the Prince of Persia, this is like the first serious game I remember playing. So there was probably more before this, but this is the first kind of serious platforming story-driven game that I remember playing and actually like absorbing properly, let's say. It was the first one with the time mechanic, and it was like the fighting was mind-blowing. Even to go back and play it now today, the fighting still feels better than most fighting in new games because it's just so crisp and
just,
clean and precise.
I think the time mechanic, they seem to have really phased out in games. Like there's nothing much now. I mean, I presume one of your sci-fi mentions.
We'll get to that. That's the next episode. But I'm a sucker for time mechanics. I love things where time travel, time warping, time reversal, this kind of thing. I love anything to do with time, and I think games don't do it enough.
Really? Yeah, they don't.
But I remember not just playing this, but there was also a cool mechanic with the fights where you had the dagger, the time dagger, and you had your sword, right? And you would fight with the sword. But no matter how much you fought with the sword, you couldn't kill an enemy. So you had to get the enemy knocked down, and then you had to stab it with the dagger. And the dagger would be like the final kill. Yeah. And it led to some really interesting things because you would have like two fast enemies and then one heavy enemy or something like this. And you would be trying to basically do crowd control to get someone on their own on the ground so you could do this stabbing animation. because if you were interrupted, you were interrupted, and that was it. And you couldn't just knock someone over and then do the animation because you would just be hit by someone else. So it made the fights really interesting each time. And depending on the enemies that were there, you had to like approach it differently. So you had to choose who to get rid of first, basically, out of the group. It was really interesting.
Yeah,
it was
that's good.
Also one of the first games that had a fluid like camera shift perspective. So the camera would change based on what you were doing. So you would run on the wall and the camera would shift to your left to show you running on the wall and then shift back to your right at the end of the wall.
Also, you didn't have to kind of control it yourself.
Yeah, you had no control of the camera. It was changing all the time. And then it would also be like if you were jumping to a column, you know, it would zoom out to show you the area of the next column and then zoom back in as you got near the end of the area. And sometimes I remember this was a bit clunky and you would jump to kind of the wrong thing. But far back in the day, this was like revolutionary. Because you didn't have this almost like fixed motion perspective where the camera was on rails kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
It's definitely, I can't remember, was there another, what was after the Sands of Time? Because I remember one now where you had
Warrior Within.
Was that the one where you had like a person with you? There was a woman with you.
I don't remember, but it could have been the two
There's
thrones.
There's one I remember. Well. And
the first one you have like a princess with you. Not with you, but she's like in the cutscenes and stuff all the time.
I must look it up because I remember one where like to navigate the map and it's kind of semi side scroller as well. Mm-hmm. But you'd kind of use her to place and like a grapple point and you'd have to grapple to it. I might be mistaken.
Say those kind of mechanics were probably the third one, I would say. Maybe the second one.
Because I remember those were kind of the most, the two recent ones I would have played, or recent, the last two have played. Whenever Sands of Time is on the original Xbox. Was it? When I saw the case there? Yeah.
They're all three of them are on the original.
It's just crazy. Mad how, like, there's franchises you actually forget that were out. Like, I completely had forgotten that there was an Indiana Jones game before. Completely forgot it. There used to be a Mummy game as well from the film.
I remember
and that.
This.
That was actually a really good game.
And the Scorpion King game, which was the second Mummy movie. Or the third Mummy movie, was it? There was Mummy Returns, and then the Scorpion King.
Yeah. I don't remember the Scorpion King game, though. But I remember the Mummy game.
Yeah.
And the actual proper voice actors. All right, your next game, what was it?
Okay, so my next game is one you definitely never played, I would say. 007 Racing on the PS1.
Never knew it was a thing.
Man, it's so good, right? So I played it through to completion recently on the Ambernic. And basically, do you know the game 007 Legends?
No.
So 007 Legends is like a shooter game like GoldenEye or Tomorrow Never Dies or something. And you play through like the different time periods and the different Bonds, basically. So it's like kind of a sampling of all the different Bonds. So you play like from, you know, Roger Moore and Sean Connery to Pierce Brosnan and I was going to say Craig David, Daniel Craig.
That would be an interesting spin-off. It's just like, do his introduction. It's like, what's your name? My name is David. David.
But basically, it was that, but for 007 cars, right? So it was called 007 Racing, but really it was like mission-based, right? So there was two-player where you would have like an arena fight, but it was basically you would get a mission and you would be in a certain car. So it starts off with the old Aston. And you have to go into like a castle, rescue someone, pick her up, and then make your escape, basically. There's another one where you have to chase down like a plane on a runway, and you're in the Lotus Esprit, the white submarine one. And at the end of the runway, then you jump into the water, and it turns into the submarine. There was so many good ones. There's one where you're in the BMW 5 Series, and you're chasing down this truck on the highway. They're really varied levels, really, really good now. That, for me, I think, reminded me not just of like GoldenEye, the game on N64, but also playing through it reminded me of all the things in the movies that I'd forgotten. Because for me, I saw all these 007 movies when I was a kid on like RTE or whatever at night, the broadcast channel. And then we never really saw them again because like they never came to Netflix. They were never on Disney Plus. Like if you're trying to watch it on YouTube, buy it on YouTube or Amazon, you can't. So the only way to get them is like DVD. So they passed me by for a while. So yesterday, I picked up the Bond collection, which has like all the movies, right? And we watched.
I'd hate to know how much.
It wasn't that expensive because it was like €30 per Blu-ray for the Bond movies, right? And I was like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. You know, like I'm not paying €35 to watch GoldenEye and then paying another $35 for the next movie and the next movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the collection was €58 new.
That was, yeah, that's a steal.
Every movie from...
Where did you get that?
On Amazon. But it's like, I'll send you the link, but it's basically every movie from like the very first incarnation of Bond, right up to, it's a really cool case and everything, right up to not the very latest Craig David one. Not the very latest Daniel Craig one, but the one just before it. So it's missing this very last one that just came out. But it has the one, it has the three Craig David one.
Yeah.
So it has those, it has like every movie, but I just dive straight into watching like the Golden Eye.
I've never seen the Daniel Craig ones.
They're really good. A lot of singing.
Musical
numbers. But yeah, I watched GoldenEye yesterday, and it brought me back to like thinking of the game, thinking of 007 Racing, you know, and like I forgot how much stuff was crammed into the GoldenEye movie, basically, and how good it was. It's like a real fun movie, you know. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and like there's the scene where he goes to Q for all the gadgets, you know.
Yeah,
Q is like the gadget guy, and in my head, just because I've recently watched the Daniel Craig ones, I thought they would be much more serious, you know. And you got to the Q scene, and like you see a fella step into a phone booth in the background, and then like this airbag explodes in the phone booth, and he's like jammed up against the glass, right? And then like they're walking around, and he's showing them all the gadgets, and then 2 seconds later you see them wheeling past with the guy in the phone booth, and like there's like a seat explodes and someone goes through the roof and stuff like this. It's just real, like, doesn't take itself too seriously, you know. It's quite like quirky and fun, which I really like. So I didn't finish it yet, but we're going to finish it probably tonight and watch the rest of the movies then.
But like, but they, I think they become far less. It used to always be gadgety, and like especially all Pierce Brosnan's ones. Like they're all gadgets. Like even the Beamer he had, he could control from his phone.
Yeah,
and it was a Nokia phone, I believe, as well.
It was the N-Gage, like, wasn't it? He had the N-Gage phone, the gaming phone. And that turned into the controller for the car then, and he's sitting in the back seat of the car driving the car.
Yeah, like it's I miss those. Like they stopped using gadgets, really.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to be more believable or what? I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're trying to be more grounded, but it led to really interesting scenarios in the old movies where he would like connect two or three gadgets together to get this perfect thing going that happened, and you just wouldn't be expecting it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of missing a bit from the new ones.
His laser watch, you know?
Yeah. And like in the new ones, they have like these chase scenes, you know, and stuff like this that go on a bit too long. And in the old one, they're kind of very simplified, but it works better, I think, you know.
Less camera angle
changes and stuff, but yeah, it was really cool. But anyway, that's my number two. So I think since we're pushing out a bit for time here, we'll fly through some honorable mentions. I'll go through mine first. You can go through yours then, I guess. So a few for me would have been Tomb Raider. I remember playing that a lot.
Yeah, that's on my list, actually. How many games?
In Tomb Raider?
Yeah. I was actually surprised. The whole franchise, how many games are released for Tomb Raider? How many would you think? How many do you feel?
I just take a guess that it's roughly, like, what I have in my head is around 15.
All right, you're a little low. So 20 games in total. I was actually surprised. I didn't think there was 20, yeah.
No, I didn't think so either. Weird.
I just remember, like, my I think I spent more time in that mansion trying to lock the butler into the freezer than I did probably playing the game.
Everyone did.
He was
so annoying. Do you remember in the mansion in Tomb Raider 3, you could unlock the quad bike? You had to do a series of puzzles, and then a trap door would open in the maze, and you had to run through the maze within a certain amount of time, get under the maze, and then you would have a quad bike, and you could drive around on the quad bike. Do you remember that?
Don't.
Maybe I'm
Remember doing it, but I think you're right. I think you're right. Don't remember ever doing it. My brother might have done it.
Okay. I remember trying it, but I don't know, did we get there? I remember seeing the quad bike, but I don't know, did we actually get to it?
I miss kind of the older Tomb Raiders. Like, I haven't played the new... Is Reloaded came out in 2023. Shadow of the Tomb Raider is the last one I have and played.
Yeah. I enjoyed the new ones.
And
though,
it's...
The trilogy.
I think it's either in Shadow or Rise where you can still go to... I think it's in Shadow. You can actually go to her mansion still.
Really?
And it looks class, like
proper HD.
Like a glorious house.
I remember in Rise, I think it is, or maybe the first one, that you have some missions in the mansion, but they're just like set pieces in a section when she's a child. It's like a flashback.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I wish they'd done something like, I'm not sure if they probably have done it now, but I'd love like a thing where if you're doing missions and you actually get artifacts or you bring stuff back that it's displayable, I think would be cool. So I think I miss kind of games like where you have like the collector's element where you can physically display.
You have the trophy room basically.
Yeah, I have that in one of my honorable mentions, which would be, I'll get to that in a second. What's your favorite or your most memorable Tomb Raider?
Tomb Raider 3, hands down, just because of the mansion. I just remember fucking about with the mansion for hours and hours and hours. Because if you got stuck in the game, you could always revert back to just the mansion and just messing about. And then you'd kind of build up the confidence to go through the main missions again. You know?
Yeah. Those are my next lot that I'd like to buy. I remember like the most memorable moment for me, and I'm just actually having a look through all the games, and I believe it was Chronicles. But there's a part in it where you've Midas's, it's John Midas, the Golden Touch.
No.
There's a story of a guy who just wanted, like, he was given a, I'm not sure from who, but he was given a gift or a wish, one wish, and he said like he wanted to, anything he'd touch would turn into gold.
Ah, yes. I remember.
And
this.
Both a gift and a curse. You know, he could obviously, turn everything into gold, but touching anything, touching people himself, you know, turns himself into gold ultimately. So it became the biggest curse for him. But I'm almost certain it's Chronicles, but there's a segment in that where you're playing it and you actually have to, you need to add weight to kind of a scale. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a hand that if you step onto it, you turn into gold. So it's actually like, cool. It's actually really cool. It's just something that always kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
But I loved like Tomb Raider, like no other game. Like I'm actually playing a bit of the new Indiana Jones, which is actually, it's actually quite refreshing. Highly recommend it. And the fact that it's on the pass for free, check it out.
You must check it out.
But it's just, it kind of brings you back to kind of like those kind of games, you know, where you just like, you have your exploration and you're in, you know, a bit of puzzle.
I miss the puzzle focus, you know, that like in Tomb Raider, the fighting I would say was limited enough or rather quick.
Yeah.
But like what became tiresome for me in the new trilogy is you would come into an area and then you had like 20 minutes of fighting people. And sometimes it was really difficult and you were getting overrun and it was just like trying it again and again and again, and it became a little bit fatiguing. And the parts I loved of that game was when you had a puzzle to solve. That was like that felt like you were exploring. That's just it. Yeah, that's the core of the game.
And it's like, especially if it opens up to a new area or to finding something, it's way better. Like there's elements that is it in Shadow of the Tomb Raider, you actually have tombs to discover and go in. And
yeah,
it's all those are the kind of the puzzle. But it just bugs me. And I know games are games, like, but you know, for what you'd find, you know, you're in some random area for 10,000 years and you're finding gunmetal parts. Just bugs me.
Yeah.
I wish there was something else to it. I wish you could just find currency that you could trade off.
Yeah.
My headset is. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, perfectly. Yeah, you still hear me?
All right, it's my headset is gone. Give me 2 seconds. I want to put on earbuds.
And just take a note for the editing there. I just take a quick bathroom break there while you're getting set up.
Hello. Okay, that's why.
You good?
No, I can hear you now.
Okay, super.
I just hope my microphone is the actual. It should still be. Yeah. Sorry. I had a feeling my headset was dying. I just kept getting this kind of sound intermittently, kind of like this power down sound. And I was gone? But it did show 60-something%, but. I think it's actually only 20%.
Okay. You have it on charge now, do you?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, so it'll be grand for the next episode. Okay, so will we start into it again? I just have a note there where to edit. Okay. So, yeah, what were we just discussing there? So we were discussing Tomb Raider. So that's Tomb Raider, right? So, some other honorable mentions, and I'll make it rather quick for these. The Abe's Odyssey games and Oddworld. They were quite good. The first kind of stealthy games I played. But let's leave it for the stealth episode, I think, because they're a big one for me. Okay. So we'll do an episode on stealth games. There's the Disney games, which will be its own episode, I'd say. Ape Escape was a big one. But remember I said that this was the first game I remember using the analogs for, where the analogs made sense?
Yeah.
this was actually the first game that required analogs. You couldn't play it without analogs. Wow. First ever, which is interesting.
I can remember, like, I still, like, I can actually remember getting my first Rumble controller, like, just the, yeah, just, I still, oh, man, it's, I don't think I could ever, all right, obviously I could go back and play a PlayStation, but I just find the controllers, I know you can I think you can actually get generic ones that are not a generic, I think you can get, I'm not even sure the name of the brand, I'm not sure if SCUF do one, but yeah, they do a controller that looks like an Xbox One, which will work for PlayStation.
That would be good, because I tend to buy games on the Xbox, unless they're a PlayStation exclusive for the PS2, because the controller is uncomfortable. But also, the Xbox was quite like ahead of its time. So there's some games on the Xbox that play in HD, 720 wow. HD. Yeah. Dead or Alive 2 Ultimate Edition is one of them. And this plays in HD on the OG Xbox, 720p HD. Is that not insane?
Yeah.
You know?
And probably, you know, like, I think, like, certain games as well, they just ran better. Like, I actually, because obviously we've, like, back playing, like, some Portal games lately.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And, like, Portal 2 on the Series X isn't optimized, so it doesn't run properly at all.
Okay.
Which is really frustrating.
Outside of Ape Escape, I just have two more. Age of Mythology, which we kind of talked about.
I actually have it on Steam. I haven't played it.
No, oh, it's so good. We can do multiplayer on that, so we can play it together.
Yes, please. That'll be awesome.
So there's Ratchet & Clank, which I have a funny Easter egg about, right? So in Ratchet & Clank, there was always this rumor when I was younger that there was a creepy museum tour in Ratchet & Clank. And if you turned on your console at 3 o'clock in the morning, obviously you could have just set the time to 3 o'clock, but we didn't think of that as a kid. If you turned on your console at 3 a.m. and you went to a certain point, you could go off the map and you would end up in a museum where the developers of the game would, like, walk you to the museum and present you with things that never made it into the game that weren't quite finished, like characters and weapons and stuff like this. And it actually exists.
It's really I love when kind of they do stuff. I love, like, dev kind of, or Easter eggs or dev contribution. There's actually one, do you know Sea of Thieves?
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is something I'm largely playing at the moment because they've changed so much in it. But there was actually a dev who passed away back in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And his name or gamer name was Glitterbeard. So they've actually put in novels around the game that you can pick up, and it's a bit of story and they actually put in, because obviously it's it is online. There's only max like 12 people on a map at a time or on a server. So they put in like a cosmetic that you can get, but you need to get 8 people together. So you can obviously have a team of 4, but you have to try and negotiate without getting killed.
Oh, cool.
So you need to get all 8. I actually got it done there recently. So all 8 people need to meet up. You have to go to a specific spot at a specific time of the day, so sundown, and you all have instruments, and there's basically 2 of each instrument. So there's 4 instruments in the game. 2 people are with the hurdy-gurdy, 2 with the drum, 2 with the banjo, and 2 with the accordion kind of thing. And you play a specific song, and you play it to its entirety, and it actually kind of does this kind of really cool animation, and you all unlock a Glitterbeard cosmetic.
That's class.
So just a kind of a nice kind of homage, you know. I just love when kind of devs do kind of wacky things or kind of nice contributions. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So give me your honorable mentions, Jim.
Well, Assassin's Creed was definitely up there as one of mine. It's just one of those kind of, like, and when I say Assassin's Creed, I just mean games 1 to Black Flag, because I think the new ones, even though they are Assassin's Creed, I think they've really, you know, they've really stepped back from the Fraternity of Assassins or that kind of lore. Like, I thought it was weird how in Black Flag, you're kind of, Damien is the guy you're actually playing outside of the Animus. And it's just like his whole story just seemed to fall away to the wayside. And it's just, for me, the franchise died after Black Flag. But it's kind of super nostalgic playing. It was such a game kind of ahead of its time, you know, like from like a historical aspect, you know, the architecture that you're going around, like even, you know, around Italy or even in newer games as it is impressive, like when you're kind of going around, you know, Greece and in Valhalla, you're or even in Unity. And that was kind of the thing when I was saying like collectors, like when you have like in Hitman, we were saying there when you can pick up every weapon and you can gain or like in your room, so you can kind of work towards collecting everything in the game. Like in Assassin's Creed, you can do it too. Like I know in the second one, like you have the mansion, so you can kind of unlock art, and the armor that you pick up throughout the game, there's display sets there. The same with in Unity, there's actually an armor room that you can, everything gets, all your outfits and everything kind of show up.
I kind of like that in a game where you have like a, cozy kind of base to go and view all your stuff.
Yeah. And look at your achievements or progress.
Yeah.
I love games that do that. I like Assassin's Creed, again, it's just like a storytelling kind of standpoint. And obviously it is kind of a stealthy aspect to it.
One of the first open world games as well.
That I remember
anyway.
Yeah.
Where you have this true like open vast city.
Yeah, and climbing mechanic where you can kind of go up and out of everywhere. Can't go into a lot of buildings, but they did kind of bring that in as the time went on.
Yeah.
RTS games, like I have. Yeah, what's your background noise? Turn your game down a touch.
It's the cat scratching at the door there.
You can leave the cat in.
I can't because they'll start jumping on the desk.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll leave him in for a few minutes. He'll be on. She won't get in and he won't jump.
I used to play a lot of RTS games growing up, like the likes of obviously Command and Conquer, but like The Settlers was another one, and that would be kind of a real standout game. And again, it's just like attention to detail, you know, when you just attention to detail, cat, attention to detail. Yeah, sorry. So Garrett has his cat up in his lap, and he's showing him off to me. So like attention to detail, obviously, when you're kind of getting ore and manufacturing it into blocks of metal. So you'd actually see all these kind of animations taking place. So it's like, again, just games that kind of just done extra kind of steps or animation, which is kind of nice little
details
they added. Yeah. And Stronghold Crusader, that would have been a game like growing up with, like my dad used to play it a lot. And it's all kind of medieval kind of castle building. And again, there's a campaign for it. And it was just a game that like we'd grow up kind of playing together, kind of a thing.
Question for you. Did your dad have like one particular type of game he would play? Like one genre and then nothing else?
He used to play Tomb Raider and Stronghold Crusader. Those would be kind of the main two. I did try and get him into, I'm just trying to think of what's on my list. I'd have to probably look. I know there's one or two definitely on mine, but I did end up getting all, they actually had expansions for, or new games that came out for Stronghold. Mm-hmm. So I actually had all those bought. So he was actually tipping away on those. But the thing is now at least we can, I must say it to him, I said it to him recently, I said he's down for it. I said we must actually try and get in. And the thing is, I don't want to crush him. When I play with him, I'd want to break his spirit. So we'll have to kind of play it down. He'd probably trounce me now, knowing him.
You'll be like, now we shall see who the master has become.
Just build up this massive army. Just invade. Surround him. Start building all your barracks around his.
Just totally soft lock him in the game.
and my kind of last one kind of would have been Halo, I suppose, growing up.
Yeah.
And again, that kind of dives into kind of the multiplayer aspect. And the same with COD as well, I suppose. And I think actually I was surprised. How many COD games are there, Gar?
15 million in one.
52 games.
52?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Between everything, that's including mobile.
And remakes kind of and like everything like this.
Remakes, DLCs that came out. Not even so much DLCs. That is a lot of games.
Yeah.
So Modern Warfare 2 in most cases is the biggest standout game for most of us. I think it was kind
Modern
of
Warfare 1 and
pinnacle.
2 for me. That was the one
two
I did
would have
like
been kind of mine.
That was the one I did the best online in. I think I told you that it was in like the top, you know, 20 or 50 in Ireland or something. And I was just
modest as well,
rushing.
Yeah.
So modest about it. People used to call me the Annihilator.
Is that what that little self-made trophy on the back is there?
Yes, that's exactly
top,
it.
Top 30, yeah.
Best COD player.
So Modern Warfare 2, I think like was probably the pinnacle anyway. So how old do you think Modern Warfare 2 is?
When did
it come out?
Modern Warfare 2, 2010?
You're too good at this. 2009, yeah. So 16 years
ago. I only
ago,
know
because like,
I bought them recently, so I was looking at the years, so it was kind of cheating.
All right, so you're kind of cheating. I couldn't think it was. I would have thought, obviously, it was a while back. But man, we're getting old. We're pushing on.
But I say 2010, but then in my mind, 2010 is 10 years ago. But it's not anymore. You know.
No, certainly
not. It's crazy. So yeah, should we move into number one, our most nostalgic game?
Most nostalgic. Go for it.
Okay, you can probably guess this, but mine is Pokemon Red. Well, Pokemon in general, but Pokemon Red in particular. Because for me, it's so nostalgic because it was just omnipresent in everything I did. So it was in the, like, MTV. It was played with my friends. It was played on my own. We had the trading cards. So we had all the figures. There was just so much to it. And also, I really liked the fact that there were so many rumors around it. There was so much, like, community.
And you had everything. Like, I remember, like, I didn't play the games, but I'd done the cards. I used to collect the cards. Sure. And obviously the series.
You never knew how to play the cards, though, did you?
No, we were just playing to collect, like, lovely prismatic cards.
Trainer's Guide won't need that.
What's this? And there used to be books, wasn't there, that you'd...
Yeah, there was books as well.
And stickers we used to.
I recently read the mangas as well. And there was one book in particular, and I have it here because I bought it recently. And this is the Pokemon Handbook, right? And in this, there is basically the first 150 Pokemon. And then it tells you, like, the moves they learn, how they evolve, what level they evolve, what they're good against, what they're weak against. And this was, like, my Bible for playing the games. Because I would look up, oh, when does this guy evolve? And... like, I could tell you what page of the book the Pokemon were on. I knew it, like, off by heart, basically. And I prepared something, right?
Hate to play against you.
I know. I prepared something, right? Because I want to show you... a lot of people that don't play Pokemon don't realize, like, how dark the subject matter was, you know? Because you think Pokemon and you think happy and joyful. And if you read the mangas, it's quite dark. And then you go back and play the games and there's a lot of stuff went over your head. And you're like, Jesus Christ, is that in the game, right? So what I prepared is, right? I have 4 Pokedex entries, right? Okay.
Right.
2 of them are not real and 2 of them are real. And you have to tell me which ones are real and which ones are not real. Okay. So the first one is Kadabra. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So according to its Pokedex entry, a boy with psychic abilities woke up one day and had transformed into Kadabra. This suggests that Kadabra might actually be a cursed child, making it the only Pokemon with a direct human connection. Okay. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Right. Number 2, Parasect. Right? So the Pokedex claims that Parasect's body is completely controlled by the massive mushroom on its back, meaning the original insect is actually dead and it's just being controlled by this mushroom on its back. Some Pokedex entries state that the fungus spreads spores that infect other Pokemon, dooming them to the same fate. Scientists in the Pokemon world debate if Parasect is either a Pokemon or if it's a living spore colony. The next
kind of
one,
terrifying.
Yeah, the next one, right, is what Butterfree. While most trainers assume Butterfree's powder simply paralyzes opponents, early Pokedex entries describe it as highly toxic, capable of stopping small Pokemon's hearts in seconds. And wild Butterfree are known to release large quantities when startled, sometimes suffocating entire nests of bug Pokemon in self-defense. And then there's one last one, right? Drowsy's Pokedex entry explicitly states that it feeds on children's dreams and prefers them over adults. Some later entries say that if it eats too many dreams, the victim may never wake up and may die. Additionally, its evolution, Hypno, lures children into the forest and they are never seen again. Which of these 4, so 2 of these are actually in the game that you can read and 2 are not. Which ones do you think? There's the Kadabra one where he was a boy, the Parasect one where he's the living dead mushroom, the Butterfree one with the deadly powder, or the Drowsy one where he steals children's dreams and Hypno kidnaps children?
I'm going to say middle 2.
The middle 2. So the Kadabra, or the Parasect one and the Butterfree one.
Parasect and Butterfree, yeah.
These are the 2 fake ones.
My ones?
The real one is the boy turning into Kadabra. Yeah, your ones are the 2 fake ones. And they're not in the game. And the real ones are the one with Kadabra and the one with Drowsy stealing children's dreams. Is that not insane?
And luring kids into the forest. That's
and
nuts.
Luring kids into the forest. That's in the game. That's how dark this game is, you know? It's crazy. And these are expanded in later ones, and there's, like, more about these topics in the later games in Pokedex entries, because they change as you go through the games. So it's crazy. And this stuff went completely over my head as a child, you know?
I suppose, look, there's such a wide kind of, or like kind of people who kind of consume their content. Maybe it is trying to be more applicable to adults as well. Or there's maybe more lore and more kind of.
Yeah, I think you could be right there. But yeah, I mean, I could talk about Pokemon for days, but.
The newest Pokemon on the Switch, is that first person? Or third person?
No, it's third person. But it's like third person follow you rather than top down like the old ones.
I kind of would like to, I'd love to actually try the newest one, just to get that.
The new
kind
ones
of
get into a lot of space and time stuff as well, you know, which is interesting. But tell me, what is your most nostalgic game, number
you
one?
You see, because they kind of tie in, I'd say, and you see, it's not nostalgia as in like, because I didn't want to put something down was just like, oh, my earliest game or a game. You know, because obviously they'd all kind of hit like a different kind of nostalgia. But I think Splinter Cell series, like, just like an absolute addict for the stealth genre. And I know we'll cover it more in stealth or in the stealth section. But the thing that was actually quite disappointing, because obviously I've played through all of them, absolutely devoured those games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, it's mad when you're kind of going, you really see progression from, and this is the thing we were going to cover before as well, like what game, and we're going to go through this now in a minute, actually, what we'll do is, can you think of any game where, let's say, there can be as many games in the series. So I'm just going to say Splinter Cell, all right, there's six games, all right. I think as the games went on, they actually got better.
Yeah,
it's not a lot of the time, like you'd find sequels or kind of a series of games getting worse, or they become less developed or less kind of rich. Like Chaos Theory is the third game, and again, this like originally released on the Xbox, like, you know, the OG.
Yeah.
And it's so ahead of its time with lighting and story, and it's just an iconic game. Like growing up, this is what. This to me would be kind of like that when you're kind of opening the Xbox for the first time and you're it sounds weird, but like that new smell of electronics and that to me, like if you were to say like, oh, one game that just categorically like you could bring with you, like if it was a game I could actually experience fresh again,
it'd be Splinter
Cell.
I remember as well playing the third one of these, and you had the co-op stealth where you had to do things at the same time. And that was
Chaos Theory as well.
That was insane.
The latest one in Black Cell, there was actually Michael Ironside. He actually, because I was kind of really put down, I actually bought Black Cell on Steam, but at the time my PC wouldn't run it. Not well. So I was sitting on that game for a while, and I eventually got it on the Xbox One. And to my kind of dismay, Michael Ironside, who always voices Sam Fisher, wasn't voiced in Blacklist. It's voiced by a different voice actor.
Really?
Yeah, because at the time, which
does he then come back in the later games?
No, that was the last one was Blacklist. That was released in 2013. Apparently, which it is true. So Michael Ironside actually was suffering from cancer. So he had thyroid and prostate cancer, and he's recovered. He's still obviously, I suppose, doing his checkups and stuff. But it was just kind of a blow, you know. But obviously, and it was actually quite nice. You can actually look up; it's on the forums. And initially, there was kind of not so much outrage, but nobody was aware that, I suppose, well, unless you're really following it, I think most people weren't aware that he was being voiced by a different actor. But as soon as everyone found out that Michael Ironside had cancer, then there was a huge outpour of people like, "Take the time, all the time you need, recover," And it was quite nice. There was actually an interesting kind of thing. So Tom Clancy, who's the author of kind of the Splinter Cell series, he. When he was in chat with the creators for the games, the writer Tom Clancy was opposed to him having the iconic triocular headset. Yeah, he wanted two separate sets of goggles, but they thought the game in development said it was going to be too difficult or tedious for the player to be swapping out. So they integrated it into one, because there was no such thing as having,
of course,
night vision and thermals together. So no, it was just kind of an interesting tidbit.
Crazy.
No, it's cool. So no, by far, Splinter Cell. My up there is definitely one of my favorites.
But as you said, that's a game that just holds up so well, because I played this recently as well on the Xbox, and I played it on the Xbox One X upscaled, and then I went back to the Xbox because I kind of like that older feeling, you know? Because the Xbox One, like the original Xbox is still really good in terms of graphics compared to the PS2 when you play it on like a 4K TV, let's say. But the mechanics, it honestly just felt like a good modern game. It didn't feel like I was going back to you know, 20 years ago or whatever it was.
Like, it's still, and the lighting, like shadows, lighting still holds up. Like, yeah, it's
absolutely,
like, the only frustrating play in the first one was, you know, the three strike rule, you know, you set off an alarm,
it's yeah, mission three over times
kind of a thing, which got frustrating. Or suddenly, like, if you spooked an enemy and you're in pitch dark, that sometimes they'd lock onto you and shoot you dead. And they'd still be able to kind of know where you are. But there was actually a weird thing with Pandora Tomorrow. I don't think you can get Pandora Tomorrow now. Not a physical. You can only get a physical copy.
Mm-hmm.
And Pandora Tomorrow was another phenomenal game. It kind of actually, I can remember actually when they implemented, you know, when you kind of, you're coming up to like a wall or like a corridor, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
So you put your back to the wall so you can peer over your shoulder down the corridor. And they implemented this kind of tactical, they called it like a tactical kind of cover swap. So you kind of roll over to the other side.
Ah, okay, yeah.
But there was like still kind of movement mechanics even in the first game, like that I was kind of like stunned that were there, is where like if you're in kind of a narrow space that you'd jump up the wall.
I was just going to say, you'd be doing the splits in the corridor basically. Yeah. And it told me to do this the first time in the very first game. And I was like, this was in this game at such an early stage. It's weird.
Yeah. And like, and that's the thing. Like, I think a lot of the older games, either they were just bolder to try new things, or is it just that the newer kind of development of games, they're just like, the players won't mind. They're just We do notice, and I think it's just like the voice acting in the game was just like outstanding. You know, you get the bit of humor in it too. You know, you're interrogating people and you know, it's like, who is it? And you're interrogating was like, it's the boogeyman. You know, it's you get a little bit of fun.
You miss that from new games, the simplistic aspect, you know. I think, like, you're doing the tutorial in the old Splinter Cell, and it's enough that you're getting through the tutorial, but you're not getting bored or overwhelmed. And, like, if you go to a new game, like, I don't know, like the new Halo, and there's so many different mechanics to it, and there's, you know, so many different things to learn. And it's, like, nearly an hour of, like, tutorial before you get stuck into the actual game.
Yeah, like if, as they say, if it ain't broke, you know. Like, I can remember, like, even, you know, because do you remember the OG? You bought the OG Xbox. Have you got the OG controller? You've got the smaller one.
I got the smaller one because I prefer it.
Yeah, you don't ever rage when using the older controller, because you'd fire that thing across the wall. You'd take out a wall.
Yeah, that was a big boy.
Yeah, I used rage. You'd throw your controllers down and you'd probably do damage with it. But,
I remember, looking at that controller and thinking, like, there's no way this can work. And then holding it for the first time and just being like, it feels like an extension of me rather than a controller. You know, it was just so
like,
comfortable.
I couldn't get over how big it is.
Yeah.
And remember, like, how clever, like, even the wires were. Like, again, this is forward thinking from, you know, like the wires used. So you plug your lead in for the controller into the original Xbox, and they used to actually be like a little a separator,
a breakaway.
Yeah.
In case you have a dog or cats, or in case you trip on it. And it works. It really works.
Just forward thinking.
Yeah.
And then they released the new controller. So the new controller for the Xbox, if I'm not mistaken, had a white and a black button.
Yep. Correct.
I played through, I'd say, the bulk of the games. And I can't remember where it came in. I think it was maybe Chaos Theory. But I remember finishing that game. And it was only when I went back after watching some videos that I realized that you could actually swap. You actually had, it was like a double tap. It was either the white or the black button, and it would put into sniper mode and shotgun mode. And I never knew you only had the assault rifle mode, which was very frustrating.
Yeah.
No, definitely up there. And then, like, again, just the diversity in the games. Like, have you played all the Splinter Cells?
I've played the first three, and then I haven't played anything after that. So I've played Double Agent is...
Double Agent and Conviction are, like, they're actually really good. They do introduce kind of different systems, but like Double Agent is like you're actually in prison and you're trying to get recruited by kind of it's not a gang, but it's a criminal organization. So you're kind of working for them, literally as the title states, you're a double agent. So you're working for, I can't even remember the organizations now, but you know, you're
some kind of crime syndicate.
There's a morality kind of system brought in. So how are you going to become an actual double agent and turn flip sides? So you have to kind of balance the scale with morality.
Okay.
And the same with the Splinter Cell Conviction then is like completely different. Like you don't have your gadgets as you'd otherwise have them. So they kind of, you're gone a bit AWOL. Your daughter apparently was killed and or kidnapped, one or the other. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to find out basically who done it. So you're kind of going against the organization that you always worked for. They done this kind of mark and execute system. So you can build these kind of, it's like a tagging system they put into the game. So you can kind of like tag certain NPCs and then you can literally do like an execute. So you can basically take them all out at once, kind of like a
quick fire kind of thing. I think I remember this in another game as well. It was another Tom Clancy game, maybe Ghost Recon or Wildlands or something like this.
Wildlands, yeah. So you have a tag and then you can take them all out together.
Up to like a certain number and then it uses that ability for a while until it refreshes kind of thing. I remember this.
And it's like Splinter Cell Conviction is, again, just top-tier voice acting, storytelling. I like when they kind of tell you, I love games that like, you know, you get the story as you play. It's not like you have to stare at something or it's been fed to you through cinematics, which I otherwise tend to skip. I find a lot of cinematic, I just can't, I don't have the patience to sit and watch. I get too eager. I'm like, just get me back into the game. I want to play. Yeah. But like, this is kind of fed to you. Even when you're kind of going transitioning between different locations, you just get like a huge white print coming up like on a building. Like it almost looks like a projector in the distance. You know, whatever the location you're in, or it's tastefully done.
It's kind of,
so would recommend,
somewhere between like environmental storytelling and actual storytelling, somewhere kind of crossing over.
That for me would be my best. What's your last, or did you finish all your honorable mentions?
No, that was mine. Pokemon was the last one. Pokemon was number one. So I guess that's pretty much it. I think we can leave this one here, and then our next episode, what's it gonna be? It's going to be a sci-fi game. So same kind of format, I think, same kind of style, but sci-fi, which is going to be interesting because we're huge, huge sci-fi nerds, I think.
So it's anything space, I'm kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Space, I'm surprised, and science and scientific.
One thing I'm surprised it wasn't on your list is World of Warcraft.
You see, again, I suppose we kind of covered that with kind of MMO.
Yeah, I suppose it's going to be heavy in another of the ones.
Yeah, I think like, I think there's kind of, there's actually an, all jokes aside, it's a very serious issue, Gareth, but game addiction, and this definitely was up there, like, like I said, we'll discuss it. But World of Warcraft, and there's actually a huge amount in that, and it just wouldn't be fair to just gloss over it.
We'll cover it mostly in the game addiction episode. I think that's going to be game addiction episode. I think that's going to be a good one, because there's,
right, so if we call everyone it.
Yeah, we'll call it there. And thanks for listening and cheerio.
Thanks for listening.
Till the next one. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.